Golden State Media Concepts bring you the Bible Study Podcast. Reflect and journey the Bible as together we study God's Word and be inspired. Bible study made fun and informative for all ages. It's the Golden State Media Concepts Bible Study Podcast.
Welcome to the GSMC Bible Study Podcast, brought to you by the GSMC Podcast Network. I am your host, Sarah, and it is almost Thanksgiving. It is Thanksgiving week, and we will talk about Thanksgiving, but that's not till later in the week. Let's not fast forward yet, because this year and, well, the first, yeah, no, this year, it's just going way too fast. I swear yesterday was January, and if it wasn't January, then didn't we just have, I don't know, summer or Halloween? We are just rushing through the year. We're almost to Thanksgiving. But before we have Thanksgiving, first we will have the 26th Sunday after Pentecost, which is the Sunday that we are on currently, November 18th, and trudging our way. Trudging? That's not a good word. That just sounds like it's a chore. No, we are journeying our way through year B. We are almost done with year B, and then it'll be Advent and we'll be moving into year C. But a couple more Sundays of year B, and that is the 26th Sunday after Pentecost for one of those Sundays. As usual, we'll be looking at the Old Testament texts assigned for this Sunday and then moving on to the New Testament texts on Wednesday's episode. So let's go ahead and look at the first text for today. It comes to us from Daniel chapter 12, verses 1 through 3. At that time, Michael, the great prince, the protector of your people, shall arise. There shall be a time of anguish such as never occurred since nation first came into existence. But at that time your people shall be delivered, everyone who is found written in the book. Many of those who sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life, and some to shame and everlasting contempt. Those who are wise shall shine like the brightness of the sky, and those who lead many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. So that again is Daniel chapter 12, verses 1 through 3. It's not long. I mean, it's only three verses. It is from the second half of Daniel, which tends to be the more visionary, more apocalyptic material. If you are familiar with Daniel, which we don't read very often in the lectionary, it doesn't come up much. It does come up today and again next week. But you may know that it is divided into two parts. There are the stories of Daniel 1 through 6, and then the visions of 7 through 12. And 1 through 6 has some great stories, right? We may just want to be like, yeah, maybe we could just cut Daniel in two and keep the first half, but ignore that second half, because the first half has some really great stories. You have the story of Daniel in the lion's den. You have the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the fiery furnace, standing up to King Nebuchadnezzar. I mean, first of all, you get to say the words Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, and Nebuchadnezzar. That's just a mouthful right there, but hey, it's good. So it's tempting to just focus on those stories. They're fun. You know, they're easy to tell to younger people. I mean, they can be a little scary. There are lions and fiery furnaces, but they have been told in lots of different ways. There's even a VeggieTales version of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego called Rack, Shack, and Benny. And I'm not going to start singing the song from that because it'll be stuck in my head from now until Easter. Ah, it's there. It's stuck in my head. Doesn't matter. But we don't have a story from the first half of Daniel today. We have a reading from the more difficult portion of Daniel, and that is the second half, 7 through 12. We are in chapter 12. And, well, apocalyptic genres can they present a challenge because they can be maybe kind of exciting. They scare some people. They confuse a lot of people. They're very difficult to encounter, which is why it can be tempting, again, to focus on the stories and ignore the second part of the book. Our commentator for today, who is Roger Nam, Associate Professor of Biblical Studies at George Fox Evangelical Seminary in Portland, Oregon, says that it's a mistake to, he says, focus solely on the stories of Daniel 1 through 6 while ignoring the visions of Daniel 7 through 12. According to Nam, the narratives of Daniel are meant to be read alongside the apocalyptic materials. Even the language, he says, suggests that they need to be integrated, as in Daniel 1, Daniel 8 through 12 is in Hebrew, but Daniel 2 through 7 is in Aramaic. Now, I did not know that. That is interesting. The stories all have to do with being faithful as a subject within a wider oppressive empire. But these are complemented within the theological proclamation of a sovereign God, as underscored throughout the apocalyptic visions. We talked about the book of Revelation last week and how it is a book of hope. Whenever you have these sort of dark, scary, confusing apocalyptic visions, you have to read them in the context in which they were intended. You have to figure out what was their original context and what was their original purpose. If the book of Revelation is a book of hope, well, what about the book of Daniel? Well, if you think about that wider context and as someone being a subject in an oppressive empire while still being faithful to God, to the beliefs that you've been brought up in, then there were ways of doing that. You know, you've got the stories of really faithful people in scary situations, Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. You get these stories, and then you get some of the visions of the hopeful future. They are apocalyptic in nature, but they present a future that can be when we get through these more difficult times where we are in whatever oppressive situation we are in. So back to the commentary, Nam says that Daniel 12, the chapter we read from today, launches the final scene of the four apocalyptic visions of Daniel. In the prior section, Daniel sees an angel who speaks of a prince of Persia who will wage war and defeat many powers, and in the process defile the temple. A king from the north shall arise and wreak havoc on the land. Some will flee, some will fall, and some will follow this king. But the king abruptly dies. As with any powerful monarch, this event is expected to bring a period of chaos in the wake of a sudden power shift. Okay, so now you've got the previous section giving us this vision of what's going to happen, and we know that it comes to pass. In fact, where he says some will flee, that's the Transjordanian states, some will fall, Egypt, and some will follow this king, such as Libya and Ethiopia. But that king abruptly dies. So at this point, Daniel 12, 1 through 3 introduces a transition in both time and space. The opening phrase, in that time, signals a temporal shift from the present to a future eschaton. Within the passage, that time is paradoxically filled with both anguish and deliverance. He says that already the book is set within the context of the Babylonian Empire. And this passage recognizes the particular severity of the moment, describing an upcoming time as, quote-unquote, distressed, even more distressed than any other prior time since the primordial age. But the passage also indicates that the persecution is of limited time and will soon lead to a period of deliverance. These are not two different time periods, but rather the time of unprecedented anguish is also a time of salvation. There you get that hope mixed in with the anguish or despair. And that is the crazy thing about these apocalyptic writings. You have to remember the context, and you have to remember that they were written to a certain audience in order to convey a message, and that is a message of hope and a message of, you know, that this time too shall pass. There are other things ahead. I want to go back a bit to where he says, in that time, it's important when, you know, to pay attention to certain phrases as you're reading through the Bible. And in that time signifies something specific. He says here it's signifying a future eschaton. In that time always signifies a time shift, though it could be kind of like once upon a time and telling a story from the past, or it could be, or even once upon a time telling a story that is sort of outside of time, you know, like fairy tales tend to be. We're going to talk more about this, but we do have to get to our first break of the podcast. So stay tuned. You're listening to the GSMC Bible Study Podcast, and I will be right back.
Still on the search of that one true love? On the limbo in this crazy world of dating, marriage, relationships? Well, listen to the Golden State Media Concepts Relationship Podcast, your one-stop podcast for everything about relationships.
Welcome back to the GSMC Bible Study Podcast. We are discussing the text from Daniel, chapter 12, verses 1 through 3, first Old Testament text assigned for this 26th Sunday after Pentecost. It is one of those apocalyptic readings that can be scary and confusing and make us wonder, why the heck are we reading these in church, especially so close to Advent, or sometimes in Advent when we're supposed to be having, you know, anticipation for the birth of Christ, the coming of Christ. Well, that's why. I mean, apocalyptic, we think apocalyptic so negatively, which, yeah, it usually is portrayed that way. But you have to, again, know more of the context, which is why we're looking at this commentary for this week. And that time, which we were talking about before the break, occurs within a new spatial framework, according to our commentator, and again, that is Roger Nam. He says that the introduction of the angelic character of Michael, and the Hebrew translation of that is "who is like God," in case you were ever wondering what the name Michael meant, and that's the Hebrew translation. So the introduction of Michael moves the setting from earthly to otherworldly realms. Michael is not merely introduced, but described as the great ruler, implying a level of superiority beyond the earthly rulers of previous chapters. Daniel 12, verse 1 uses the word arise or stand twice. First, Michael arises or stands, and second, he is the one who arises or stands upon the children of his people. The verb invokes a call to warfare in a spirit, a parallel to military activities, the call to rise is long awaited. So this is both historical narrative and prophecy, and they have been waiting for this call. This is why Michael is often depicted with a fiery sword, right? Because he is arising and standing there as a call to military activities, a call to warfare. Michael is an archangel, of course, as we know from other sources. So then he goes on to say that the paradox of anguish and delivery is manifest in two groups of people. Both groups share the following commonalities. One, they are asleep. Two, they will awaken to a fate that will last for the ages. Aside from this, though, they're really just, they're polar opposites, right? You've got one group whose awakening is going to lead to shame and death. But for another group, this is a smaller group within a collective identity as hearers of the apocalyptic message, and it is a qualified group of quote-unquote all who are found written in the book. Most will recognize the connection to the idea of a written document in Revelation, but it also bridges to earlier movements in the Old Testament that ascribe a growing awareness of textual authority. Okay, so inclusion in the written list is an emblem, he says, of power and protection. So there's this list. Written documentation, written lists alluded to other places, not only Revelation, but Chronicles or Numbers. The next verse then describes the glories that await this group. First group wakes up to just shame and nothing good, death. The darkness of the preceding passages is overcome with a brightness in the sky and the stars for the ages. The passage proceeds with declarations that follow this imagery of magnificent light. The thought, he says, of an afterlife is a pretty late development in Old Testament texts. The vast majority of passages dealing with death are much more concerned with the proper burial. But rather than obsess with the specific mechanics of afterlife, he says that the heart of the text is to provide hope. There's that word again, right? God is redemptive, even when it does not appear so in this life. The introduction of the afterlife in this passage is intended to provide relief for those who are suffering and for those who grapple with a perception of God as distant in the midst of chaos. This section is a culmination of many challenging situations for the faithful, both in the narratives with Daniel in the foreign court, but also within these apocalyptic visions. So again, it's really important to read these, not only the stories, but the vision's intention. Yes, the stories can be exciting and fun fun to tell, but they also connect to this wider vision. The stories of Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego take place in context, right? In the context of being subject to a ruler who does not respect your beliefs, who does not respect the way you worship, etc. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego refused to worship the idol that they were told to worship. That's why they were cast into the fiery furnace. But they had faith in God. So they were living in a time that was very difficult for them. They had to decide how they were going to respond to the order to go against their commandments, the commandments that they had been given by God, not to worship false idols. So they, you know, even though that's an exciting story, it fits in with the rest of this, that yes, things are bad, but we have a redemptive God. We have a God who is a God of hope, a God who reminds us that death does not have the last word. That doesn't mean that we're never going to have pain or suffering in our lives, because we live in a broken world. We live in a world where with other people, right, who aren't perfect, just as we aren't perfect. And we all make choices and we all live together in this great massive amount of chaos that swirls around us. And as we make choices, they affect other people. And it's a whole thing. So we're not going to have perfect lives free of suffering. But what we do have is the reminder that God is present with us in that suffering. If you think about the story of the fiery furnace, when they look in, they see not only Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, but they see a fourth figure. God is with them in the fiery furnace. God does not abandon them. That is what we have to remember, is that God is with us in the moments of pain, in the moments of anguish, in the moments when we are struggling against circumstances that are so much bigger than ourselves, and we don't know how we're going to face them or how we're going to address them or how we're going to maintain our own faith and integrity and moral compass within those situations. We have the hope of God. We have that promise that God is a loving God, that death does not, in fact, have the last word. And that actually makes a lot of sense leading up to the season of Advent, because that is when we celebrate the inbreaking of the light into the darkness, the ultimate hope of Christ coming to dwell among us, of the culmination of those promises of God in the tangible form of a human baby. All of that, all of those promises come to fruition. All of the waiting, all of the expectation comes in the form of a tiny, vulnerable, helpless child who brings to the world one of the greatest gifts that that world can ever imagine, who brings light to the darkness, who reminds us that there is hope even when we are despairing, who reminds us that God is with us no matter what. So again, it is time to take our second break of the podcast. When we come back, we'll be turning our attention to the psalm assigned for this week. So stay tuned. You're listening to the GSMC Bible Study Podcast, and I'll be right back.
Tired of searching the vast jungle of podcasts? Now listen close and hear this out. There's a podcast network that covers just about everything that you've been searching.
Hey!
The Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network is here. Nothing less than a podcast bliss with endless hours of podcast coverage. From news, sports, music, fashion, cooking, entertainment, fantasy, football, and so much more. So stop lurking around and go straight out to the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. Guaranteed to fill that podcast itch. Whatever it may be. Visit us at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And download us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Google Play.
Welcome back to the GSMC Bible Study Podcast. We are talking about the texts assigned for the 26th Sunday after Pentecost. We just finished speaking before the break about the text from Daniel, and now we'll move on to the psalm. Hopefully, you're probably hoping a little less apocalyptic in nature, but our text from the psalm this week comes from Psalm 16. It's Psalm 16 in its entirety, which is 11 verses. Those verses are as follows. Protect me, O God, for in you I take refuge. I say to the Lord, you are my Lord. I have no good apart from you. As for the holy ones in the land, they are noble, in whom is all my delight. Those who choose another god multiply their sorrows. Their drink offerings of blood I will not pour out or take their names upon my list. Lips, the Lord is my chosen portion and my cup. You hold my lot. The boundary lines have fallen for me in pleasant places. I have a goodly heritage. I bless the Lord who gives me counsel. In the night also my heart instructs me. I keep the Lord before me always. Because he is at my right hand, I shall not be moved. Therefore my heart is glad and my soul rejoices. My body also rests secure. For you do not give me up to Sheol, or let your faithful one see the pit. You show me the path of life. In your presence there is fullness of joy. In your right hand are pleasures forevermore. Again, that is Psalm 16. And once again, if we want to relate it back to the Daniel passage, we have someone who recognizes that God is their refuge, even in the midst of the anguish and the suffering of this world. You know, protect me, O God, for in you I take refuge. The psalmist says that you are my Lord. I have no good apart from you. It focuses or touches a little bit on ones who choose another god and how that is not the best decision to make. But for the psalmist, nope, God is where they're putting their trust. God is where they find their hope. I bless the Lord who gives me counsel. And there's all of these things, you know, my heart instructs me. I keep the Lord always before me. And because he is at my right hand, I shall not be moved. Therefore, my heart is glad and my soul rejoices, and my body also rests secure. All of these things that come from knowing where your faith lies, where your hope lies. The psalmist is expressing joy in all of these things. Do want to look at some commentary. This commentary comes to us from Beth L. Tanner, who is professor of Old Testament at New Brunswick Theological Seminary in New Brunswick, New Jersey. And she says that this psalm is one of trust in uncertain times. So, yep, there's that theme again. The opening verse asks for God's protection and refuge. The pleas are not as urgent as a lament. There's fear in the air, she says, but no immediate or specific threat as we get in other psalms. So the psalm itself is written in five stanzas of two verses each, making it symmetric in nature. I appreciate symmetry. The first and last stanzas are statements of trust, providing a circular movement. The psalm begins with an imperative plea to God to keep or guard me, for I take refuge in you. At the end of the day, she says, nothing can protect us from danger and uncertainty. And uncertainty is difficult and anxiety producing, but no matter what or where, we can find refuge in God. The stanza then quickly moves further, declaring not only God's protection, but I have no good apart from you. It is more than safety, then, she says, that happiness and God is found only in God or the gifts God provides. Now, psalms, as we know, usually provide some kind of contrast. Even when they're laments, they still have elements of praise. As I've said before, the psalms contain pretty much every element of human emotion, and that can be, you know, you get a lot of contrast in human emotion. She says that sometimes modern folk can find this contrast distracting, but it's simply the shape of ancient poetry. And so the second stanza, she says, verses 3 and 4 is just that. Verses 3 and 4 contrast the holy ones in the land with those who choose another god and a promise not to follow the latter. So scholars have tried to decipher who these holy ones are, but even without an exact definition, she says it's clear that this stanza directly relates to the concept of what is good from above. Good is found in God and not others, and this is a reaffirmation of the first commandment. The next stanza, verses 5 through 6, are the return to the good that God gives. So here the psalm moves far beyond combating fear or going after other gods. She says there are two words in Hebrew that defy easy definition. The first is Asher, which is often translated as happy, and the other is tamen, or complete. Yet this psalm serves as a good definition for both. She says the person who has the characteristics in this psalm is complete. And because he or she is complete, they are happy and content. God has provided boundaries that are praised. God's gifts of a portion and inheritance are enough for the ones praying and worthy of praise. We are to be content in God and the parameters placed on human existence. Now, this concept of contentment, she says, can be tricky for a lot of us today because it's not about material or monetary value. We have to be careful not to imply that the broken systems of this world are justified and that we should be content in the face of all of the isms of the world, racism, sexism, all of the injustices of the world. There's so many things. No, she says, the psalm is not speaking in defense of injustice, and we shouldn't be content with broken systems, but we should be content with God and our relationship with God and our place in God's kingdom. There again, it goes back to that hope in the midst of the system. We don't just say, well, okay, thanks. I've got hope in God, so doesn't matter what's going on in the world. I can just sit back and be content, even though I have anguish and suffering, even though my neighbor has even more anguish and suffering. No, that's not what God calls us to do either. So we aren't just to be content with those broken systems. What we're to be content with is our relationship with God and the hope that that relationship gives us in the midst of everything that goes on around us. This is a type of personal completeness, she says, that provides the strength and confidence to speak out against worldly powers. Despite what we are not by the what we are not by the world standards, God has given to us what we need, and even our conscience is a gift, for it keeps us in the ways of the Lord. The next stanza, verses 7 through 8, then continues the confession, declaring the greatness of the Lord for God's teaching and God's constant presence. The psalm blesses God for the gift of counsel and a conscience that is guided by God, keeping us from the wrong paths in life. And then she says that the psalm concludes with resounding praise of what it is to come in, of what is to come in the future, and that future is secure in God's hands. That is pretty much, I think, where we're going with the theme for this week. I would say that's pretty obvious that we are going with that, that future is secure in God's hands, no matter what's going on in our present. And I feel like I've been repeating myself a lot. I'm not going to continue just hammering that at you. Hope, God, relationship, all those good things. This too, you know, this instant that we're in, this moment of time that we're in, is not forever, but God and God's promises are. So we're going to wrap it up for today, and thank you so much for joining me. Join me again on Wednesday when we'll be turning our attention to the New Testament texts assigned for the 26th Sunday after Pentecost. Hope you're having a great week so far, and please do remember that you are a beautiful and beloved child of God. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts Bible Study Podcast, part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network, from movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.